Make a better connection with your friends on Facebook. Use the hottest voice conferencing service around. Call from TalkShoe.com. That's Talk, like I'm doing now, and Shoe, as on your feet.com.
Recorded live.
Welcome to Roz's Healing Community Talk Show. Our goal is to provide tips and tricks to live with joy even in the face of adversity and to accept each day as a miraculous gift. The art of healing is living in the present moment. It is my distinct pleasure to welcome Edward Lay, an 8.5-year cancer survivor, professional speaker, seminar leader, coach, and author to our show this evening. You might have seen Ed on the Today Show, MSNBC News, Discovery Health Channel, or the Learning Channel, and of course, the Montel Williams Show. I hope you did. Ed creates positive workplace environments to energize people and increase productivity. He proves having cancer does not prevent productivity. It just so happens that he has a great sense of humor, which he shares with his audience. This evening, Eddie will share with us how cancer has impacted his life and how his gifts have helped him heal and helped others heal and still be productive. He is the author of and featured in the books Secrets of Superstar Speakers and Triumphs of the Human Spirit. You'll be able to contact Eddie after the show at www.edwardlay.com. So here we go. Eddie, again, it is my pleasure to welcome you as just an incredible gift to the world.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Eddie, can you tell us a little bit about how cancer impacted your life regarding how you live your life now compared to before?
Well, actually, it's interesting. I know I read a lot about people who have experienced cancer and then they have these big life changes. But I've always been kind of a fun, wild, and crazy type. So it's like I am the kind of person who, after a diagnosis of cancer, you become. So what I find is the attitude that I already have, it just enhanced it even more. So I become more, I feel like I'm more fun-loving. And the one thing that I do find the biggest things is little things don't bother me like they would. Like if somebody, ran in front of me when I'm driving and I almost, got pushed off the side of the road before, I would say, oh, what is that person doing? They could kill someone. And I say, okay, just let it go. Just let it go and move on. And that's been the biggest change. It's these little things, these little everyday annoyances. Those I just let go.
And I think that is such an important message for our listeners, because letting go of these little things gives you energy and actually enhances your healing ability.
Yeah.
And you mentioned, I like this word crazy, trust me, because I have the crazy gene myself. Jimmy Buffett wrote a song, and it's called Changing Latitudes and Attitudes. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing is, we're in such a fast-paced world and everything bothers us and there's so much cunning going on. And he says, if we didn't laugh at these things and if we weren't all crazy, then we would be insane. So this is called, insanity prevention. I like the way you put your attitude and your crazy and the fun-loving and letting go.
Yeah, I remember I've been fortunate enough, I've been on a lot of national TV shows, and I read the blogs, people blog about the shows, and I'll never forget, one person wrote, they said they saw my show, and they said, oh, he seems like a really nice guy, great episode, but he seemed just a little bit off. I thought, well, that should be obvious. I mean, that's not a newsflash.
Right. I mean, that's what makes us, who we are.
Yeah, I like being a little bit off. I like being a little different, a little eccentric.
Absolutely. I love the whole part about just being and not worrying about doing. And when you are being yourself, that's what makes us, meaningful to somebody else so that they can, have something to say.
Yes, absolutely.
So, in your journey with cancer and knowing maybe our listeners don't know it, but you were misdiagnosed. It took 2 years to diagnose your cancer.
Right. Actually, what happened was it started in early 97. I noticed there was a lot of trips to the bathroom. As a matter of fact, it was almost like a family joke with all these trips to the bathroom. And so finally, after this went on for a few months, it was like March, April, I went to see my doctor. At first, he didn't think it was anything. And then he said, well, we could do a test called a sigmoidoscopy. So I had the sigmoidoscopy done, and it came out normal, and I told my family, see, everything's fine. However, over the next 2 years, I kept getting sicker. I kept getting sicker, a lot of trips to the bathroom, a lot of, you know, if you don't mind me being a little graphic, you know, like there were some diarrhea episodes, some bleeding episodes, and it just kept getting worse and worse, and my doctor kept saying, well, we did the SIG, everything, you know, should be fine. And so what happened in the summer of 99, we switched insurance companies, which meant a new doctor, and I remember it was August of 99, I'm ready to go to the big National Speaker Association convention. I never miss it. And I woke up one morning about 2 days before, and I had the most intense abdominal pain I've ever had. It was just horrendous. So I called up my doctor, and I said, I'm going to this big convention. I think I have a stomach flu. Could I come in? And this was my new doctor. So he examined me, told me I could go to the convention, and I felt pretty sick at the convention. When I got back, they called me up in my doctor's office and said, are you feeling tired? Because the blood work reveals that you're extremely anemic, and we need to have you undergo more tests. And they said they wanted me to have a colonoscopy. And I always tell people the colonoscopy is completely pain-free. The only thing is the day before.
The preparation.
So I remember now, so I've had 8 colonoscopies, and so now what I do is I just take my laptop, I go into the bathroom, and I just stay there all day. Well, I keep getting up, you know, just stay there all day. You know, bring the TV in, laptop,
right.
Stay there all day. So I had this, and when I went in, I was thinking, well, I have abdominal pain, anemia, I probably got a bleeding ulcer. So I told my family, don't worry, it's a bleeding ulcer, everything's going to be okay. So then after I wake up from the sedation and my doctor is holding a photo and he said, I'm sorry, during the procedure we found a tumor. And I was just floored. I mean, it was just the last thing, you know, I had expected.
Right.
And then I had surgery just shortly thereafter, and they found that the cancer had spread to the lymph nodes, which put me in stage 3 of the disease.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a year of chemo. I started in, let's see, it was September of 99, and then I finished up in August of 2000, and to this day I continue to be cancer-free.
Well, it's absolutely wonderful to hear this wonderful story. While you were going through treatment, did you ever consider unconventional choices, or should I say integrative choices, like either acupuncture, meditations, anything like that?
Oh, yes,
or,
yes.
You know, even supplements. How did you approach that?
Yeah, what I did is after the diagnosis, I knew there were two areas that I needed to cover. And the first one was the psychosocial. And what I did is I joined an in-person support / education group, and we met at a hospital. And we always had a presenter, and then we always had time for discussion, updates, see how everyone's doing. And that was incredibly helpful. And then I also joined an online support group. And I think, Roz, you told me you're also a member of a group on ACOR.
Yes,
Association of Cancer Online Resources, and it's ACOR.org. And that was the best thing I ever did. That was so incredibly helpful. It just put me in touch through the listserv with all of these wonderful people and resources, and I just learned so much. I actually, through the group, I learned about, just to give you an example, I learned about a new prep for the colonoscopies, because first I took the little bottles.
Right.
And Let me think of a nice way to put it. Toss my cookies after that.
Yes, right.
Then they said, then we'll try the jug, the big jug of the Go Light.
Uh-huh.
Well, I tossed my cookies after
then,
that.
Then,
what am I going to do? Both preps make me sick, and I sent a post to the list. I said, what am I going to do? Both preps make me sick. And they said, well, there's a pill form.
Mm-hmm.
And no one had ever told me about the pill form. No one.
Right, I don't hear that from the doctors either.
I talked to my doctor, and I was the first person in his practice to ever use the pill, and now it's the only thing I could use because it doesn't make me toss my cookies. And that's just one example of how that listserv was so vital. And I know that you said you've benefited from being part of the list also.
Yes, for pancreatic cancer I have been on it, and it is amazing. First of all, the support is in such strong force for love and caring for everyone on the list.
Yes.
And there is so much advice given. And I do have to say, sometimes you have to kind of be a little bit cautious about some of the advice. But the people that share have gone through such pain and agony to learn what is the best thing in their circumstances and want to share it.
Yes.
And there are people who are asking for advice, names of doctors and different treatment centers.
Yes.
And has anybody had experience with these things? It's an incredible exchange of information.
Mm-hmm.
But what impresses me most is the support people give one another, not knowing anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But they become friends. Actually, several people have called me or written offline. And when I went to a pancreatic cancer symposium, I met up with one of the people from that list.
Mm-hmm.
It's an incredible, energizing and resource for hope and unbelievable information.
Oh, yeah, because I, like you, many people I've called. I've actually met several people at conferences, and it was just the best experience. So that was really a big part of my psychosocial. And that actually, through the list, it actually relates to the other part, medical. And I always believe that we need to become as educated as possible about our specific disease, because lymphoma is treated differently than pancreatic cancer, than breast
yes.
cancer, than leukemia. So learn about your specific cancer, meet with people, go to events related to your specific cancer. And one thing that we talk about related to the medical part is what we call the alternative and complementary therapies.
Mm-hmm.
And on our particular list, we're allowed to talk about complementary therapies, and how we define complementary therapies are therapies that complement traditional therapies. Like, people would still have their surgery, their chemo, their radiation,
right.
And then they would have therapies that complement, which could be like a massotherapy, acupuncture, laughter therapy, of course, my favorite. Art
yes,
therapy,
of course.
Music therapy, and of course, pet therapy. I love my pets because, you know, we have 16 dogs.
only 16 dogs?
16, yeah, and three kitties. And three kitties.
And three kitties. I hope our listeners hear that. If you need a dog, you know where to call.
Yeah, we show and breed pugs, and we didn't intend to have that many. What happens? We had our first litter. We said, we're going to keep one. Then people would come by and to buy and say, oh, no, you can't have that one. You can't have that one. And then before, then we kept three, and we can't do this again. Then we kept two. And then before we knew it, we went from six to 16. And,
well, they certainly must be able to get all that positive love from you. But when you guys come home, there must be no room left, that they've licked every part of your body and welcomed
yeah.
you.
Oh, that's the kind of welcome. That's why I think we could learn so much from dogs. I think they're here to teach us. But as I said, that's the pet therapy. It's all part of the complementary therapies. And I took
right.
part in any complementary therapies. And also another complementary therapy that was actually never mentioned to me when I went through this about 10 years ago, because when I was diagnosed 10 years ago, all my healthcare professionals would just say, just take it easy, just rest, go
mm-hmm.
home, rest, sit in a comfortable chair, rest, take it easy. But now what we're finding is, based on the person's situation and approval from the healthcare provider, we're actually finding that moderate exercise is
yep.
a very beneficial, and 10 years ago no one would ever mention that. But
yes.
now we're finding that some moderate exercise, complementing a traditional treatment, is actually very beneficial. And I've read about several studies where people recovered faster from surgery, they recovered faster from treatments, and it doesn't mean, you know, becoming a triathlete, because that certainly would not be my thing.
Right.
But it just some walking, 20 minutes of walking a few times a week, just getting out and moving, because, you know, that's why we have muscles and joints, because we were meant to move. We weren't meant to sit.
Absolutely. And I can't emphasize enough the two points that you've just made. One was definitely that a person should self-educate themselves as much as possible about the disease that they have. It's the first level of healing, to be truthful.
Yes.
And, you know, there are people who don't want to know very much. But when you are knowledgeable, you are more in control to make informed decisions and have to take care of yourself and even work as a team with your healthcare providers.
Yes.
So I wanted to emphasize that.
Yeah,
and
I tell people, in case you don't feel comfortable learning about the disease, find a family member, friend. It could even be a social worker, healthcare professional. You need someone to be your advocate.
Absolutely. It's very important for successful treatment as well as healing and recovery. And then also this exercise part, we know that, you know, years ago people with heart attacks, everything was, you know, don't move, don't go. And then, you know, then if they get heart attack people up, you know, right away, as soon as they do certain procedures for people. Mm-hmm. And in all surgeries, within 24 hours, just about, you're walking those floors.
Yeah.
So the whole idea is to keep walking.
Yeah, and I remember one article I read about cancer and exercises. What happens is with cancer, you often feel fatigue, and then with fatigue, you rest. And then what happens is the rest makes you feel more fatigued, so it becomes a vicious circle. The more
mm-hmm.
fatigue, you know, the more you rest, and then the fatigue cycle just gets worse and worse. So that's why articles I've read that even if you feel some fatigue, still try to do a little walking, and it'll actually relieve the fatigue.
Absolutely. I mean, it doesn't have to be a lot. I actually participate in what's known as a gentle yoga class,
mm-hmm.
and it is certainly very different from a traditional yoga class, but it is a mild stretching
mm-hmm.
and different postures that actually keep the synovial fluid circulating
mm-hmm.
and, you know, your respiration, and so rate, you know, increases. And so it's very important that we do not be very sedentary, even if it's just a couple of minutes, you know, every hour or so, that people can get up, even though they are in a very fatigued state, either from chemo or what have you. But I remember being in the hospital and I had to walk.
Oh, yeah, they pulled me up the second day after surgery, even though I was exhausted. They just dragged me out of bed. And I remember they said I was always very polite. They said, okay, now we're going to be taking you for a walk in the hallway. I said, oh, no, I just had surgery yesterday. I can't get out of bed. And they said, no, it's time for your walk. I said, oh, that's very sweet of you to want to take me for a walk, but I don't think so. And they said, no, you're getting out of bed. And they just pulled me right out.
Yes, yes, it is very important.
Yeah. Well, actually, the other thing that I wanted to mention, one thing on our particular listserv from ACOR, we're allowed to freely discuss complementary therapies, humor therapy, pet therapy. That's free to discuss. You could say whatever you want about complementary therapies, but there's another type of therapy that we're absolutely forbidden to discuss.
And what is that?
If you want to discuss it, you have to go offline or join another group, and that's alternative therapies. And how our group, the listserv from ACOR, the colon cancer listserv, defines alternative therapies, those are therapies that a person abolishes traditional treatments such as surgery, chemo, radiation, and they take an untested medication. They go off to a foreign land and try
mm-hmm.
an untested medication. So anything that's untested, hasn't been proven, could be potentially dangerous, is absolutely forbidden to discuss.
That's very interesting. On my list, the only thing that people have actually talked about in that regard was, but it was in conjunction with traditional treatment, were some herbs from India, because these were actually people who were living in India
mm-hmm.
and did not even have access to as much as we have here in this country. So it was very interesting, this discussion that, you know, went forth about some of the herbs that they were taking. But no, there was no rejection, you know, no authority from the system came, you know, back and said anything. But
yeah,
when
this,
what did
policy.
Occur when
mm-hmm.
somebody actually offered up a prayer and had said something that had religious overtones, and that was said, no, we have to keep that out.
Yeah, like what we're on our listserv, we're allowed to talk about prayer, spirituality. We could say the word God, but we can't be specific to any one religion.
Right, right. And this was kind of a little specific, but some people got very offended that it was even judged.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll find these kinds of things, but nevertheless, overall, cyberspace type of support groups are very helpful.
Absolutely.
And,
absolutely.
Yeah, I find that to be a very good thing. I have not met anyone in my experience who has done any abdication, should I say, of traditional treatment in favor of some of the unproven things, but maybe, you know, in conjunction, taking supplements, barley grass, wheat grass, that kind of a thing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it's beginning to get some studies to show that there are benefits to those who can tolerate that, you know, and again, it is in conjunction with treatment.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I also recommend that when I go to a lot of the professional cancer conferences, they said, if you're taking any herbs or supplements, make sure you tell your healthcare provider.
Yes, people are afraid.
Right, because certain herbs could actually counteract the effect of some of the chemotherapies. I know that one common supplement, or I'm not sure if it's herbal, what's the correct category, but St. John's wort.
Yes, yes.
People use as a mood elevator. That could actually interfere with the effectiveness of certain chemotherapies.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I always tell people, if you're taking any of those, make sure you let your healthcare provider know.
Yes, it is important that, and if your healthcare provider doesn't know anything about it, someone needs to get the information to make sure that there would be no contraindication.
Yes, absolutely. And also with vitamins and minerals.
Yeah.
People are under depression. Well, if a little vitamin and vitamins and minerals are good, then a whole bunch would be even better.
That's not true all the time either.
No, because, for example, certain vitamins like the A, D, E, and K, the soluble, high doses of that can be very toxic.
Right, right, especially vitamin E. I mean,
right.
You could cause hemorrhage.
Right, a little bit's good, but not too much.
But not a lot.
Right.
This is new. It is. I believe, a responsibility upon the patient to make sure that they are informed as well, so that you can become, you know, a team with a healthcare provider who may not be. Not all doctors are up on these things, and they in their traditional mode. And it's important to be, you know, to work together.
Yes, and we're, as a form of partnership. But I always tell people, remember that the doctor is working for you.
Yes.
You know, you're hiring them as a consultant, and if they're not doing the best job, then you could bring on someone else because they're working for you.
Yes, and they mostly want to help you, but you have to provide the information.
Yes, right.
That's very important. You have a 15-minute time frame to mm-hmm. get all the information in you can to your doctor in that time. And so it's good to write down all your questions and have a list of all the medications, herbs, supplements, whatever it is you're taking, and to be able to use that time most wisely and efficiently.
Yeah, that's what I always tell people. Plan ahead, bring a pad and paper. Some people, if it's okay with the doctor, they ask if they could record it.
Yeah.
You know, that would be fine. And some
that
people,
was a new one to me. I hadn't seen that.
Yeah, and then I always tell people, if you feel uncomfortable, because I know Beth went with me, my wife Beth, for the first few years, just because I was pretty, you know, frazzled. So Beth was there, so because there were certain things I was probably not even hearing. And so Beth would come with me, and she would take the notes. And then after a while, when I got into the right mode, I was able to go on my own. But it's important to have someone with you. At least in the beginning, I found it was very important.
I think it's always an important thing to be prepared and to ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
The questions are very important, especially if you're understanding of whatever treatment and about the progress of your disease, the progress of what you can expect from the kind of medications you're taking or any kind of reaction, so that you can feel so much more in control. And if you should sense the doctor is rushing you, it is very, very important to let that doctor know that you understand he's busy, but you need to understand what is happening. And sometimes they may not want to give, you know, the patient more time. And if they don't, then you have to decide either getting another appointment or you do have to find a new practitioner.
Yeah, because I actually, after two visits with my first oncologist, I got a new oncologist because he was so doom and gloom. And any time I mentioned also any new treatments, I said, I've read about this, read about that. Oh, don't worry about that.
Uh-huh.
We know what we're doing here. Don't worry. He thought that when I discussed things that I was somehow implying that he wasn't up to date on things.
Mm-hmm.
And so after two visits with him, I thought, well, maybe this isn't working out. And I found a new oncologist, which I just love.
Ed, this is such an important point to make for whoever is going to listen to our program and who is listening, to realize that you are not dumb,
mm-hmm.
and to follow your gut. And when a doctor says something, well, you don't have to worry about that, that's a clue.
Right.
That is a clue that you want to know more, and you need to, you know, it's not to be put off.
Mm-hmm.
And there are tons of clinical trials going on, and there's new research going on, and it is public information.
Yeah, and that's what another thing I discuss, clinical trials. Oh, don't worry about clinical trials. Don't worry. We've got everything under control here.
Yeah.
Don't worry
I mean,
about And then it was actually by the time I found out about clinical trials, it was I was ineligible because with the clinical trials at the time, and I think most clinical trials are like this, is that you can't have any previous treatment because
Correct.
Then they don't know, is it the previous treatment or is it the new treatment in the clinical trial that's
right.
working?
Right.
So, but I was already into treatment for about 2 months, and then it was too late for me to be in a clinical trial.
And we all learn from these experiences and want to share it with others so that they don't make the same mistakes we do, because we have such respect for the physician
yes.
that we think that, you know, they know more than we do at all times.
Yes,
and at all times, they
also
don't.
One thing I wanted to put in a little plug for clinical trials, because an incredibly small number of adults, I mean, about 80-85% of kids are in clinical trials, but a very small number, I think it's 10%, 15% are in clinical trials, and that's how we learn about new treatments. So I
Absolutely.
Highly recommend people get into clinical trials. And a lot of people I talked about clinical trials, they're afraid, well, I might be in the group that doesn't get treatment. I said, no, everybody gets treatment.
Yes.
It's just
that
one
is.
Group has the current treatment, one group has a newer treatment, but everybody gets treated.
Absolutely, yes. And see, that's a misconception that people have that they don't know.
Right.
And I think it's, again, a responsibility upon the doctor also to be as upfront with the latest information and to give that kind of information.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I feel that our type of education to the people that, you know, listen to us and where we speak to different groups, that we impart this kind of information, because we can't assume everyone knows these things.
Right, absolutely. And you know, one thing that always puzzled me, I was thinking about in terms of taking charge of our health care. I know, for example, with colon cancer, there's about 130,000 people diagnosed a year, but on our colon cancer listserv, there's about 900 people. I thought, why is there 900 people on our listserv when 130,000 are diagnosed each year? We should have a lot more people on this list.
Right,
and
right.
People need to just take charge.
They do, and they need people to give them permission to take charge.
Absolutely.
And this is, you know, that's, I feel that's part of our mission, you know, as we go out and speak to people to realize that, my big philosophy is nobody has to die from cancer. They can live with it.
Yes. And another thing that I always tell people is just because cancer comes into our lives does not mean joy has to exit.
Exactly.
Because
and
as soon as I told people I was diagnosed with cancer, they had this look of,
uh-huh.
oh, you poor thing. I said, oh, no, don't give me that look.
Right. I mean,
oh, you poor thing, you.
Yes, it is. They feel all of a sudden, you know, we're a victim and we say sorry for you. But in the long run, we know how to take charge of to live in that moment and really bring joy to ourselves and to the people around us. And that is also an important concept for people to understand. Don't be afraid to talk to us.
Right.
It's okay. You can say whatever you feel, but, you know, just be there to hold my hand when I'm down.
Yes, that's all. You just need to. You don't even have to say anything. Just being there, you know, means so much.
Exactly. And I think that...
Sometimes people say, a friend of mine was diagnosed with cancer, and I know I should call him, but I'm afraid I'll say the wrong thing. I'll say just calling him.
Exactly.
Just being there.
And that, you know, it sounds so simple, but our culture has cultured people to put this big fear into so many of our friends and our family, and... It is a detriment to our healing process, both from the caregiver side and the patient side.
Yes. I remember in our support group, we used to talk about one of the oncology nurses mentioned that years ago, well, this is 40, 50 years ago, that if someone died of cancer, you didn't that wasn't on the birth certificate because that would be a stigma for the family.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, or if someone was diagnosed, you didn't tell anyone because that would be a stigma for the family.
I'm here to tell you that hasn't gone away.
Yes.
That is still very much alive in many populations.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually have a cousin who was just diagnosed with a uterine cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Cannot say the word cancer.
Mm.
It is just so devastating. And I, you know, you also learn you can't tell people how to behave or what have you, but the... Bottom line is, in the world of healing, in my mind, is if you can accept whatever it is, then you can move from it because you can learn, you can adapt, and you, and as you say, we can bring joy. We you know, we're still alive.
Right.
There's still so many options how to be alive and energize and harness the positive energy. But that fear that of just one word can actually disable a whole family to a totally non-healing situation.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. I remember, I remember after I was diagnosed and being in the speaking industry, like we both are, some people told me, don't tell anyone because no one will book you there. They'll be afraid you'll be sick and you won't be able to make it, so just don't tell anyone. And I thought, I think it's important that I tell people because I could share about this experience and people could learn from it and feel better about not only if they're dealing with cancer, but if they're coping with any kind of stress. I went ahead and what I found is no one canceled a program.
Right.
Not one person canceled a program. If anything, they seemed to embrace me.
Exactly. I find that also. And then not only from your message, which would have been without the cancer, but then they tell you how inspiring you are because you had it and what you're still accomplishing.
Yes.
I mean, your message becomes even stronger.
Yeah,
just
absolutely.
Because you're being and doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And your whole sense of worth becomes even more significant how you've touched that, what I say, if you've touched these people.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's been my experience, you know.
Oh, mine too, many times over, many times over.
Our friends and the family, trying to get them to, hey, listen, we're really okay. Yes, we've got bad days, but everybody has bad days.
Yeah, I remember there was, to give you an example, of when I was on the chemo, I had, the first chemo was actually very mild, and I was basically able to function, and I did have a little, you know, chemo brain. My mind was a little fuzzy, had a little nausea, but I was basically able to function. And then after about 6 months, a newer drug was approved for colon cancer, and my doctor said, well, we're going to begin this treatment. And I thought, oh, that sounds fine. So I thought, well, I got through the first chemo. I'm sure I could get through the second one. So I remember I had the second chemo. I had it every other Friday morning, and it took about an hour and a half for the infusion. I'd usually fall asleep during the infusion. And then when I woke up, I felt a little groggy. And then as soon as I got home, which was about 1 o'clock, I fell asleep. And then I remember I woke up about 4, and then suddenly, and then again, nice way to put it, I tossed my cookies.
Uh-huh.
I thought, well, this is just maybe a, you know, one-time only thing.
Right.
This is it. And then I went back to sleep, and then about 2-3 hours later, tossed my cookies again. even though they pre-medicate you with plenty of antinomics.
Right, right.
And so I called up my oncologist, and he says, well, we're going to try some different anti-nausea drugs. And we tried the state-of-the-art, the newest, best anti-nausea drugs. Nothing worked. So my oncologist said, well, we're going to try an older drug that we haven't tried on you, and maybe this would work. And not only was I feeling nauseous, I also had the chemo brain going on. My mind was very fuzzy. And so I remember my mother went to the pharmacy to get the new prescription. She brought it to the house. Beth was downstairs, and she gave it to Beth. Beth went upstairs and gave it to me, and then she says, I'll go downstairs and make you some tea. So, and my mind was very fuzzy at this time.
Yeah.
And I'm opening up the bottle, and I just happened to glance up. I wanted to see what the dosage, if I should take one pill or two pills. And then I noticed it said, before taking the pill, put it in the refrigerator for 15 minutes.
Oh.
And I thought, that is the strangest thing. That I have never seen that on a pill. I've taken a lot of pills since being diagnosed.
Right.
But I thought, that's the strangest thing. I said, well, I don't feel very good. I'm going to take the pill right now. So I opened the bottle up, and I noticed the pill was a little soft.
Oh,
and I thought,
God.
I thought, now, wait a minute. I know it's warm out, but I've never heard of a pill getting soft like this. This is too weird. And so I'm just about to take the pill, and then Beth walks in the room with the cup of tea, and she says, Eddie, oh, my God, what are you doing? What are you doing? And I said, what's wrong? I'm taking the new anti-nausea pill. And Beth said, oh, my God, that's a suppository.
That's what I was thinking as you're describing this to me.
And then Beth said, you know, Eddie, I love you dearly. I'll do anything for you. But when it comes to suppositories, you're on your own. So Beth took the bottle of pills. She took it in the fridge. She put it in the fridge 15 minutes. And they say put it in the fridge so it's sturdy.
Right.
So then Beth brought it back to me, and then I put it in the place where it
was supposed to go.
And so then I remember a few minutes later, the phone rings. And I says, oh, and I felt so, first I had the chemo brain. I felt nauseous. I said, I'm sure Beth will get that. And then it kept ringing, and I said, oh, Beth went to take the dogs out. It might be my oncologist. I better answer it.
Uh-huh.
So I pick up the phone. I said, oh, hello? And then there was this lady on the phone. She says, hello, I'd like to offer you a new Visa card, 0% APR for the first 6 months. Could I sign you up right now? And I said to her, I can't talk now. I have a cold pill in my rear end.
So did you get a laugh out of her, or did she hang up not knowing? Like, oh, my God.
I think she sounded a little horrified. She said, okay. And then anybody who answered, anybody who called, it was my wife's clients, anyone who called, I would tell them the same thing. I have a cold pill in my rear, and I can't talk.
That's good.
And then Beth took the phone out of the bedroom, of course.
Right. But after all, how many people can, you know, call and they get an answer like that? You know, they'll have wonderful conversation for the rest of the day.
Yeah, I'm sure in their call center, I'm sure I was probably the talk of the call center.
Right.
But, and what I did is, we actually were never able to find, anything, so I just had to kind of struggle through with it. And when I knew I had to go to the chemo center, it was always a bit of a struggle every Friday morning.
Sure.
Beth said, okay, we're going. I said, I'm not going today.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean? No, I'm not going. So we'd be in the car, and I told Beth, I'm not getting out of the car. She says, okay, no, you've got to get out of the car. No, I'm not getting out of the car. And then Beth would say to me, be positive. I said, okay, I'm positive I'm not getting out of the car. So we go through this little thing, but I'd eventually, always go in.
Of course.
But there would be this little routine we'd have to, this little dance we'd
right.
have to go through until, I eventually made it to the chemo center.
But I think people have to understand that we have to do that just to get ourselves psyched up to go, that we have to play the game and have that advocate for us, our encourager, to say, okay, all right, you're positive, and to get us through so we can get there, even though
yes.
there's that barrier that, we really didn't want to do this.
And then I was thinking I'd get very creative, like one Friday morning, oh, there's no chemo today. The center had a power outage.
Uh-huh.
She said, really? I don't remember that. How about if I call to verify that? Well, maybe by the time we get there, the power will be on, so we could try it.
Yes.
So I always come up with these excuses. Oh, they called me and said I was done with treatment and I don't need to go back anymore. So there would always be a new excuse.
Oh, right. I mean, this, you create your own comedy.
Right. Oh, yeah, I had a good time. And what I did with actually, every time I went into the chemo, I always had a new prop with me to make it fun.
Yes, this is great. You need to tell us about those props.
Yeah, sometimes it would be a noisemaker, sometimes it would be a clown nose, sometimes
uh-huh.
it would be a funny wig. And then I'd have, and someone always had to go to the chemo with me because afterwards I couldn't drive because I was too groggy.
Sure.
So
right.
it was either a Beth or my mom or another friend, family member. So that I'd always have them take pictures of me hooked up to the chemo with my props.
Wonderful,
and
wonderful.
So when everybody else was dreading going to chemo, I actually didn't mind it sometimes because it would always be a reason for me to find a new prop. And sometimes it become a challenge. I says, okay, I went through all my noses, I went through my hands.
Uh-huh.
Now I've actually got to go out and buy something new. Because I always
get some blinky glasses.
Yes, so I have the glasses. And
sunglasses, I have them. They're wonderful.
Oh, yes, so I was always, that was what I needed to do. That was my focus, finding something. And
right.
actually, when I was in the hospital, a lot of people who came to visit, they says, oh, we want to bring you something. What do you need? I said, no, don't bring me any gifts. Don't worry about that.
Uh-huh.
I said, no, we insist. I told everyone, if you absolutely insist on getting me something, don't bring me candy or flowers.
Yeah.
Even though that's a wonderful gift, those wonderful gifts, bring me something that will make me smile or laugh.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, so
I have said this for a long time.
Yes, and so people would bring me funny books, and a few people sent me like these funny care packages that had props and games and puzzles,
yeah,
and just a bunch of fun things. And one person, I thought this was nice. They sent me this big box of things, and they sent me a tablet of writing paper,
uh-huh.
and I think it was 5 envelopes that already were stamped that I could write people letters.
Oh, nice.
And I thought that was very good. That was very good.
These are wonderful things. People, they don't think about making somebody else laugh because they don't know what you like funny. But if they just, pick out, funny little props, ridiculous things, it makes a whole difference. Where, like you say, the funny book, I can't, you'd think that gift shops, especially in hospitals, would have, you know, these kind of fun kits.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't, but nevertheless.
Yeah, and I was, actually, one thing I was just thinking about, the hospital that I had my surgery at, they invited me to come do a program.
Ah.
So I'll say, I'm sure we're all familiar with that song, Tony Bennett, I Left My Heart in San Francisco.
Right, sure.
I left part of my colon here.
Right. No, that's,
this hospital.
Yeah, that's terrific. That's
Actually, one thing that I discovered, and this was through my ACOR list, is that a person that's had part of their colon removed actually has a new nickname.
Okay, tell me.
And my new nickname, since I had part of my colon removed, I'm now what's known as a semicolon.
A semicolon, okay.
So a lot of times, sometimes when I would sign letters to people, I would always put the semicolon punctuation mark.
Yes.
Said,
yes.
Why do you always put a semicolon? He said, that's what I am.
That's the new name, right? No, it's just terrific. I mean, and I think that for our listeners, this is the way we can use humor to lighten up, to accept what we have, and to move through it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because that's what this is doing. It's not, we're not in denial, but we're taking our pain and playing with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives us energy to move on and to take the next step, whatever we have to do.
Yes, you know, I remember one conversation I had with my new oncologist. She says, Eddie, I have to tell you something. I don't understand something that you do. Maybe you could explain it to me. I notice you're always bringing funny props in. You're making everybody laugh. But cancer is so serious. I don't understand where the humor fits in.
Uh-huh.
And what I told her, it's not that I'm making fun of cancer or belittling cancer. I know cancer is serious. What I'm saying is that you could use humor as a tool to cope with the cancer.
Exactly.
It's not that we're making fun of cancer and belittling it and saying it's not serious. We're using humor as a tool to cope with it. And then she completely, you know, understood what I said.
Right. And isn't it interesting that we have to explain this?
Yes.
To these professional people who are dealing with blood and guts and death all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They themselves need to know, yes, they can take their job seriously, but there needs to be a lightening up.
Mm-hmm.
And so that they too can move forward and not burn out. I mean, to me, it prevents burnout in terms of life.
I'll never forget, I had one nurse. I mean, she was a great nurse, but she was a little tough. And I remember one day, when I first started working with her, I had that was the day I brought a clown nose in.
Uh-huh.
So here she is coming to hook me up for the chemo and has the clown nose. And then she said to me, why do you have that clown nose on? Don't you know you have cancer?
Uh-huh.
And I said, wait a minute here.
Yes.
Wait a minute.
Yes.
Back up a little bit here. And then I told her my line, you know, just because cancer comes into our lives does not mean joy has to exit. She said,
exactly.
And then she had this attitude like, well, whatever.
Right. Well, I mean, isn't that a clear statement, you know, saying that, okay, don't you know you have, you know, cancer, that you're not saying that you shouldn't be joyful? You can't
laugh.
You can't even.
It's almost like once you have
like a new role.
Right. You have to be serious now.
Yeah. Like, lady, you know, what kind of choice do I have? I've got this. What am I supposed to do? You know, I could go out and get hit by a car.
Yes. And what I did is I started keeping, I've always done the journaling.
Yes.
Because I was always looking for stories for my speeches. And so during the cancer experience, I took lots of notes. And this was actually something that happened after I was finished with the chemo and I was going for my follow-up appointments. And a lot of times I'd be wearing a suit because I'd be on my way to a speech or a meeting. So I was there, and there was this pharmaceutical rep there, and I was chatting mm-hmm. with him. And then one of the new nurses, she didn't know me. She was new. She was there maybe about a month. She ran up to us, and she says, you don't need to talk to him. He's just a patient.
Oh, my God.
And then one of the other nurses ran up to her and says, oh, my God, I can't believe you said that to Eddie. Don't you know what he does for a living? He's a motivational speaker. Now he's going to use this story and tell everyone how horrible we are. And then she said to me, the nurse said to me, she says, Eddie, you're not going to use this story. I says, oh, of course not. And
right.
Then,
yes.
The first stories I use.
Of course. Of course. I, too, when I was in the hospital, I used clown noses, too. I gave them, not only did I wear it, but I gave them to all the aides that came in and the nurses. I mean, I'm on a floor with terminally ill patients.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you're talking about a real, you know, serious kind of air about it. And
mm-hmm.
so here, you know, they're walking around with this, and they're just lifting up the mood. And then when I was able to walk, I had Minnie Mouse ears on. And I'm walking around. And one of the nurses actually had to go, can I borrow them for a while? It's just, you know, all you're doing is sending out a different energy that people can work better, live better, even though there's serious stuff going on.
Oh, yes, yes. And then, oh, and then I remember I even poked fun at my doctors, too. And you probably experienced this, too. Here I am, it's like 6:30 a.m., I'm sound asleep, and all of a sudden the doors fly open, the lights go on, and suddenly there's like a dozen people looking at me. And I remember my one of the doctors came in, and he had his interns and his residents and students.
Right, right.
And they don't say, excuse me, can we talk to you? They say, okay, this is what's going on over here. And so I thought, oh, I'm going to have a little fun with him. I said, it's 6:30 in the morning, I'm sleeping, get out.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Get out. There's the door, all of you, out. And
right,
so they started,
right.
They started leaving. I said, no, I'm kidding.
right, yeah, you know.
It was just so funny. I said, get out. And
right.
And then they were almost like, oh, we'll see him later. It sounds like he's quite narrow. And then I said, no, I'm kidding. I'm just kidding. And that was just, it's like they didn't get the joke at all.
Exactly.
They're so serious.
They're so serious, absolutely. Well, I had done something in the hospital, and then this whole crew came in and said, all right, we're here for you to make us laugh. And I said, no, I don't have to make you laugh. You're going to make me laugh. But, yes, I mean, they, you know, they kind of knew. Because I would just make funny things, you know, about all the things that were between the IVs and all the drugs they're giving me, you know.
Yeah, oh, and it was just a great breeding ground for humor. Oh, as a matter of fact, I remember one of the nurses said to me, she said, anyway, don't quite understand your eating habits. You hardly eat anything for breakfast.
Uh-huh.
Lunch and dinner, you clean the plate. As a matter of fact, they look like they were licked clean.
Uh-huh.
I said, well, let me explain that. I said, you serve breakfast here early, about 7. I'm the only one in the room. You know, by 8 o'clock, the whole family's here. The friends
right,
are here.
Right, right,
and
right.
What happens is I eat what I want, and then I just pass the tray around and say, take whatever you like. The Jell-O here is really good. Or the bidet. Take whatever you like. So by the time the tray got back to me, it was completely empty.
Of
so,
course.
And they record how much you eat. It was like breakfast,
oh, yeah.
20%, lunch, 100% dinner, 100%.
Right.
So they said, Eddie, if you could keep track of what you actually ate and let us know.
Uh-huh.
Do our percentages.
No, true. You know, you have to play with all of that because it's a hard kind of a thing to go through to realize that everything you do, they're watching. And in the meantime, you know, you want to push forward and you want to heal and feel better. And it's definitely a deliberate effort.
Mm-hmm.
But putting that smile on and just to me, the combination of attitude and visualizing that you're going to be, and the belief, having a belief in your treatment, in your healthcare team, in yourself, and in some kind of faith, helps us get through it.
Yes.
Combined with that, I'll call it that laughter spirit, the humor spirit, because that uplifts our soul.
Mm-hmm.
We make it, and the people who do make it have these components going on in their head.
Mm-hmm.
And those who don't see, at least from the literature, not that we live longer, but we have the quality of life while we are here.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a major piece in terms of, to me, healing is not curing. Healing is attending to your mind, body, and spirit.
Yes.
And if we can heal and not worry about the cure and just be there in the moment, we can experience joy no matter what.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what our listeners need to understand, that, you know, if they are told, they're diagnosed with a cancer, that they don't need to buy into it's a death sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And that don't even worry about a cure. More importantly is to live and heal, you know, with take care of that body, and take care of that mental attitude and that emotion, and accept it, and your spirits will uplift. And the thing is, the body will respond. I personally am a believer in mind-body medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is connected.
Yes.
And if we can work through that, we can laugh, we can bring joy, we can have joy, and if there's a cure to be had, we're going to get that too.
Yeah, and also on the same lines, one thing I always emphasize to people, that cancer is just a little tiny part of our life. Because I remember I wrote an article for a Coping magazine, a Coping with Cancer magazine.
Uh-huh.
And they have editorial guidelines, and one of the things they said is never, ever say the word cancer patient. You always say person with cancer.
Yes.
If you put the word cancer first, you're defining the person by having cancer.
Uh-huh.
Cancer
uh-huh.
is just one part of who they are. We're mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters. We're educators. We're gardeners. We're motorcycle enthusiasts. So I'm not actually one, but we some people
right.
are, you know, some people are rural people. I mean there's a hundreds of millions of things that define us, and cancer is just one little part.
Absolutely. And this actually applies to many disease states, that it's kind of like an educational piece, that never to say that they're a diabetic, a person who has diabetes. A
right.
person who has cancer, or a person who has a disability. This is in all the disability literature.
Yeah, but actually, I first learned this when I did a program for a special ed group, and they told me in my research, they say never say disabled person. Always say
uh-huh.
person with a disability.
Exactly.
The word person
exactly.
always needs to come first.
Exactly, and you know, I mean, for those who believe in the law of attraction, it's the same principle. As soon as you say that word, that's what, you know, that energy goes out.
Mm-hmm.
And you attract more negativity. When people complain all the time, more negative things happen to them, because that's what they are defining themselves as.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always saying, you know, I'm just that funny, crazy lady.
Yeah, and that positive self-talk is so critical, and it's something that I, you know, always need to work on myself. And it's interesting, a friend of mine told me a great quote by Gloria Steinem: we teach what we need to learn.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Love that. And I remember when I was thinking a couple of years ago about doing some newsletters, one for cancer and one for workplace issues, first I thought, oh, what if nobody reads it? You know, what if nobody likes it? I don't know, maybe it might not work. And I said, no, I can't think like that. I can't
That's right.
like that. I am going to put this newsletter together, and I believe that people will find it valuable. And then I get these emails from people saying, you know, I was just feeling bad, and then I got your newsletter, and I read that quote, or I read that article,
uh-huh.
and it just made such a difference. And I remember with my cancer newsletter, someone said, getting your newsletter is like finding rays of sunshine in my inbox.
Isn't that beautiful?
And I thought, and here I didn't want to do it. And here I was afraid nobody would read it.
Right, because we assume that everybody knows everything, or that they're not going to find us, but they do.
Yes.
And it's and my biggest problem is I stop writing because I'm engaged in doing something else. But, you know, the thing is I need to keep writing more, because people say, you know, I got this from you, and I haven't heard from you in a while, and you always inspire me.
Uh-huh.
You know, and so, you know, it's now, all right, I've got to take that half hour day 2 to 3 times a week and keep writing.
Yes. Actually, I just got an email today about a quote that I had from my workplace newsletter, and it was actually a quote that when I heard it, it was just the most perfect thing in the world. It just, sometimes you hear something and it just really, what's the word? I had an epiphany.
Yes.
That was it. And the quote is, why are you in prison if the door's open?
Ah.
And I thought that was so perfect, because we put ourselves in these self-imposed prisons.
Yes, we do.
But we could get out of them. But
yeah,
we
all we got to do is walk out.
Right, but we don't. The door's open, but yet we're still in these prisons.
Yeah, and that is a terrific one. I like that very much.
Yeah, and as soon as I heard that one, I says, oh my, and another favorite quote of mine is, if you don't ask, the answer is always no.
Yes.
So I always ask.
Yes.
Like we talked earlier about, before actually we started taping, we talked about hotels.
Yes.
Is that if something happens in a hotel, usually I always have, everything's always wonderful. But sometimes, and I remember I was in a hotel, and it was actually kind of chilly, and the heat didn't work. And I wanted heat in my room. So
absolutely.
Yeah, I'm terribly sorry. And then I thought, I remember this negotiation workshop I went to. They said hotels, you know, they'll always give you perks if something goes on, but you have to ask. So I said, don't worry, we could do another room, that won't be a problem. You know, I did, you know, put all my things out that I could just packed up, that won't be a problem. And I was just wondering, because of this, you know, inconvenience, and I know it wasn't your fault, I was wondering, could I be upgraded to a suite? And she said, let me check. And then she said, yeah, actually, we do have a suite available, and we'd
there
be delighted to upgrade
you
for the same cost. And if I did not ask, the answer would be no, but I asked.
Yeah, you got to ask for the sale, or we don't get it.
Right. I know when we ask for things we need in life, sometimes the answer is yes, sometimes the answer is no. But if we don't ask, the answer is always no.
Absolutely. And that's a great, great quote. Eddie, let me ask you this. And speaking of asking, what role did prayer or meditation play in your coping with this disease or ongoing?
Yeah, what? Of course, that was a part of it, but I find this is where the humor comes in, is for prayer and meditation, you have to sit still for a long time.
Uh-huh.
That's a challenge for me.
Okay.
So what I find is those are both spiritual activities.
Mm-hmm.
What I find is how I obtain a lot of my sense of spirituality is I love nature. You know, we live in the country now because of all the dogs. They don't allow us in the city.
Right.
So we live in the country. And I'll just sit out. You know, we have a 8 acres here, and I'll just sit out with nature or with the dogs. I find very spiritual being and by the water. We're not too far from Lake Erie, so sometimes we'll go sit by the water, and I find that to be a very spiritual experience for me.
Well, that is really a beautiful way of experiencing the universe and really connecting with God or. Because through the nature, through the earth, through all the foliage, and then to hear your dogs walking, and that is pure spiritual anyway.
Yeah,
so
yeah, and don't forget, God spelled backwards is dog.
Yes, so here we have it all together.
Yeah, and then that's why I believe, as I mentioned earlier, about dogs are here to teach us, because we also have a kennel, and there's one dog that, actually the dog sleeps on the bed with his family, and he fell off the bed and had a spinal cord injury. And at first,
oh
he wasn't
God.
Able to walk. And then he had a lot of therapy, and now he's able to do some walking. And what we talked about when I talked to his owners, they said, after he fell off the bed, he didn't say, "Oh, this is so sad, I'm so depressed." He just said, "No, I'll just adjust." And he had his therapy, and he learned to walk, and he does pretty well. He has some problems here and there. But if that happened to any one of us, we would be devastated. But with dogs, they just say, okay, this is what life deals me, and I'll adjust.
Exactly. And
whatever life gives them, they just say, okay, well, I'll adjust. And they said he still wags his tail, right after it happened. It wasn't like he was sad or depressed. He says, okay, I'll adjust to this new way of walking.
It was not the end of the world.
Right, and that's what we could learn from them.
Yes, there is much to be learned. What would you say are the biggest lessons that you learned from this whole experience?
Yeah, I think it goes back to, the two biggest things, not to let the little things bother you, because
mm-hmm.
there's so few things in life that are really worth getting concerned with. Of
right.
course, cancer is something we need to be concerned with, but most things in life really aren't that big of a deal. Like
right.
sometimes when I'm in the grocery store and I'll see someone upset that they have to wait 5 minutes in line,
yes.
I thought, oh, this is not a problem. This is
right.
waiting 5 minutes. This is not a. They don't know what real crisis is, obviously.
Exactly.
This is
exactly.
not a problem. So I remember there was a book a couple of years ago, "Don't Sweat the Small
Don't
Stuff."
Don't sweat the small stuff.
The small
yeah.
small stuff, and that's how pretty most things in life really are small stuff.
And it is true. It really is true.
So
and
critical things. Don't let these little things bother you.
And if we could just see the kids know that. But then,
mm-hmm.
we as they grow up and we become adults, we forget that.
Yes, and also one thing that I was thinking about, and it was an article I wrote about coping with stress, and it's something, again, we talked about before the taping was, and it was a quote that a friend of mine, Kate, told me about. Kate's an amazing woman. She's been diagnosed with cancer 6 times, and she's doing great now. And she mentioned this quote on the listserv, and I thought, oh, that's a great quote, but it has a certain word that
mm-hmm.
I, was concerned with. And so I talked to other people, family members and friends, and then they all said the same thing to me. What word in there? We didn't find a word in there that we found offensive. And I thought it might be considered offensive, but they said, no, it's so mild, and you'll hear the word in a second. You can tell me what you think, and because it's such a great quote, and it's Winston Churchill, he said, when you're going through hell, keep going.
Right.
And I think that's such a great quote, because what happens when we're going through kind of a hellish experience, a crisis, we just get stuck.
Exactly.
And we kind of wallow in it, but we need to keep going.
Keep going, absolutely.
We keep going, but we won't get through it unless we keep moving.
Exactly, and it also brings up to my mind in the Zen philosophy, should I say, or at least in the Eastern philosophies, the law of impermanence. Everything changes. Everything,
mm-hmm.
This will pass. So don't get locked up in it, so that, yes, just keep going through it. And as you said, as the Winston Churchill quote is, don't stop in hell.
Yes.
Keep going. I think that, you know, hopefully our listeners will have taken away quite a few things this evening in terms of knowing that humor is really quite an adjunct to coping, especially with a disease like cancer, not to sweat the small stuff, and to just be and know that you can make it through if you educate yourself and have a support system and have a good, you know, healthcare team that you can work with, and know that the world is a wonderful place full of joy. We just bring it. We just have to walk through that door, should I say?
Yes. Oh, and also, I want to mention, if anyone would like to get either one of my newsletters, I'll give my email address.
Please.
And my website and my email, and I'll spell it out to make sure everybody gets it. It's edward@edwardleigh.com, but let me make sure I spell it. It's edward@edwardleigh.com, and you could email me about either the workplace cancer or cancer newsletter, or both. I could send you information about both, and you could visit my website. It's www.edwardleigh.com. Thanks for inviting me. This has been just a wonderful experience.
Well, thank you. It is my pleasure, and we will have this, you know, up on our website within a day or so, and people can listen, download, and we want you to always tune in. I thank you, Ed, and I hope to see you soon.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, Roz.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Right. Bye-bye.